Okay, we're just going to start here, six lines down on Chaf Bet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is now continuing the description of the Braita that we brought. The Gemara had asked, because we had mentioned so many times, the position of the Chachamim versus Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Chachamim's position is that when it comes to Havdalah, when it comes to the separation or severing of the head of the Olata Oaf, that is done by severing the entire two Simanim that are there. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon believes that only has to be done by doing Rov Simanim. You don't need the entirety of the two simanim. Gemara wants to know where that was from. So the Gemara brought the Braita that started on the Aleph of yesterday's daf and then continued to the Amud Bet. And that's a three-way machloket between the Chachamim, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. And that relates to the word mishpat that is found in Vayikra Hey. When it says over there that the Olah is done, the Olah Tov is done, kimishpat, what is the antecedent of the mishpat over there? Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shmuel believe that it's referring back to the Chatat Oaf, whereas the Chachamim learn that it's referring back to the Chatat Behemah. All of them agree that whatever it's referring back to, there's some distinction between the item that they're learning from and the final din, and that's because of the word Vehikrivo. Kivo that's mentioned by the Olat Netavah in the beginning of Vayikra teaches us that there's some sort of unique process by the Olat Oaf, and that unique process removes it from what's beforehand. The Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, as opposed to Rabbi Shmuel and Chachamim, in his Limud Kemishpat, says, I'll tell you what I learn out from Chatat Oaf. The item that I learn out from Chatat Oaf is just like by Chatat Oaf. The head and the body remain attached. That is also true by Olat Oaf. And since they remain attached, then when he says Vikro, the process is different. He only requires Rov Shtayim. He doesn't require the entire severing of the head like the Chachamim. On the other hand, Chachamim, and according to Rashi, Rabbi Shmuel as well, believe that you sever the entire head, you cut off the Simanim entirely. And that's what we were searching for. Now the Gemara is going to look into the issues that each one of these Tanaim learned. How did the other Tanaim learn it? The Gemara says, V'tana kama, meaning the Chachamim. Mi'char de nafkalan mi'valak v'yiktir. Chachamim learned out the fact that the head is severed from the body, from the psukim, again in the beginning of Vayikra Aleph by the Olat Ha'of Nidava, that there it says, malak v'yiktir. The fact that malika is done, and then haktara, and then again later on in the psukim, there's another haktara that's done after you already did the haktara, and there are other processes done with the oaf. From there, the Gemara learned out that there are actually two haktarot, two processes that are done, one to the head of the olat oaf and one to the body of the olat oaf. That tells you that they are severed one from the other. So then, why do they need the word v'hikrivo? Tell us that there's that separation, that difference. So v'hikrivo lomali. Gemara says, v'ila v'hikrivo, had I not had the word v'hikrivo to tell me that the process by the olat oaf is distinct from that of chatat oaf, Havamina, I would have thought, my kemishpat, the kemishpat that's found in Vayikra Hey that talks about the Olat Oaf, I would have thought that's kemishpat Chatat Oaf, has the same din as Chatat Oaf. V'imishumu malak v'ektir. All right, so now what about malak v'ektir? I have to explain how those psukim fit in. How do I have it that the head is separate from the body? Havamina, I would have thought, mahaktara b'rosho mishom mizbeach, af melika b'rosho mizbeach. That hekesh between the melika and the haktara, just like haktara is separate for the head and the body, because there are two haktarot mentioned in the parasha, I also said the melika severs the head from the body. I could have learned something different. Just like the haktara is done on the top of the mizbeach, so too the melika must be done on top of the mizbeach. That's the distinction between a olat oaf and a chatat oaf. Chatat oaf is done down on the floor. It's done below the chuta sikra. On the other hand, the olat oaf is done above the chuta sikra. It's done on the upper half of the mizbeach. So the melika will be done in the same place as the haktara. That means on the upper half of the mizbeach. Hashad dektiv rachman of ikrivo. So the word ikrivo comes to teach me, don't just learn that from these malaku ikdir, but rather, drosh bein namiha. In addition to that, there is some distinction or differential between the processes of the olata of and the chatata of, beyond the fact that one is done above the chutei sikra and one is done below the chutei sikra. And that additional item is that the olata of has the head severed from the body, whereas the Chatat Oaf has the head and the body remain attached. Now, Chatat Behemah, de'ena ba'ala min achulin min olan. How do we know that a Chatat Behemah itself cannot come from anything besides chulin? The underlying assumption here is when we said mishpat, that was referring back to Chatat Behemah according to the Tanna Kamma, according to the Chachamim. And Chatat Behemah teaches us three things. One is that it has to come from the chulin. Number two is that it has to be done during the day. And number three is that it has to be done by yamin. Those are the three items we learned out from Chatat Behemah. And then we were transferring over to Olat Oaf to teach us those three items by Olat Oaf. Gemara says, okay, if you're learning from Chatat Behemah itself, how do you know that it comes min achulin? Samar Rav Chista Amar Kro, the pasuk says, V'kriv Aron et para chatata shelo, mishelo, v'lo mishel tibur, v'lo mishel maaser. When it says a shelo, when Aron is bringing the para chatat on Yom Kippurim, that means his para chatat, his, meaning that it's his, and not from the tibur, it comes out of his own personal monies, not from the coffers of the tibur. V'lo shel maaser, it also has to be his, means that it has to be chulin, it has to be his own animal, not something that really belongs to Kodesh. And as Rashi points out over here, this is even according to Rabbi Yehuda. who believes that Maser is Mamon Hedyot, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who believes that Maser is not Mamon Gavoah, it's rather Mamon Hedyot, belongs to you. If you're Mekadesh with it, it would work. That extra Asher Lo that's found by the Par Chatat of Aaron and Yom Kippurim teaches us that you can't bring it from Maser, that it has to be brought Michulin and not Mina Maser. So even Rabbi Yehuda, who believes that it's Mamon Hedyot by the Maser, will say it will not qualify to bring Karbonot from that Maser. So that's how we know about Chatat Beima. Tosfos pointed out, mentioned this in yesterday's daf, that Tosfos, as distinct from Rashi, says that the Chatat Beima, you couldn't have learned it out even from Chatat Aron. Chatat Aron is unique, and then you won't say that it applies to all Chataot, because it's unique, and we never learn from one Chatat to others. And if you did that, you could also learn to Chatat Ov. So Tosfos over there explained that the Asher Lo says it twice in the Parsha. Asher Lo, one, to say that it comes from his own possessions, not from the Zibur, and a second Asher Lo, to teach you that it can't come from Nikodesh. But that second Asher Lo is extraneous, completely extraneous, and therefore we have application to all Chataot. That Asher Lo teaches us not just about the Par Chatat of Yom Kippurim, but all Chataot are under this requirement that they come in a Chulin and not Mina Maser or not Mina Kodesh. Now the Gemara deals with the next thing that the Chachamim learned out, which is Mibayom, that the Avodah must be done during the day. Gemara says, Mibayom Tzavato Nafko. We have an explicit Pasuk, Mibayom Tzavato, that teaches us by all Avodah in the Mikdash that it's done during the daytime. Why do I need a special limud over here from the Chatat Beima over to Latov? Mar says, Kadei Naspo, Eno Chanami, you're right. We don't need it. We would have learned it out from Yom Tzavoto. Just while we're at it, we figure, okay, we can add this additional item. Just like Chatat Beima is during the day, so to Latov. But not that this limud has any bearing or any meaning. Yadoa Yemanit, we also learned out from the Chatat Beima to the Latov. According to the Chachamim, that it has to be Yadoa Yemanit. It has to be done with the right hand. Midraba Bar Chanan Afko. Why do you need Yadoa Yemanit? We already learned that from Rabbi Chanan. Amar Rabbi Bar Chanan. Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Komakom Shneim Etzba Kuna in Eli Yamin. So he says, oh, what do you mean? We have Etzba or Kuna. Once you have either one of those items there, then there's a requirement of Yamin. So over here in the Parsha, we also have the word Kohen that's mentioned. Since the word of the Kohen is mentioned, then we know that it's on the right arm. Why do I need you to teach me from Chatat Beimat Lato? We already have the din from Kohen that it has to be done by Yamin. So the answer is V'idach, the other position, which is Kehuna. Ba'yetzba, etzba lo ba'ikuna. When the word Kohen is mentioned, that's not sufficient to make it the right hand. You need Kohen plus etzba. But etzba lo ba'ikuna. On the other hand, etzba doesn't require Kohen. Basically, the bottom line is that you need the word etzba to teach you Yamin, and we don't have the word etzba in our parsha, so that's why we need it. So the Tana Kama, or the Chachamim here, who say that we learn out Yamin from Chatat Beima, they are holding like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, who says that it's not enough to have the word Kohen, but rather you need Kohen and Etzba, or you need the word Etzba to be there. Since the word Etzba does not appear here, therefore we need the Limud. The other possibility is, based on the first one, Damar Zed Kedei Naspo, Enoch Nami, that if we don't need this Limud, and it's Kedei Naspo like we had before. The Gemara had this in other occasions. The Gemara asked these same type of questions. And in some places it says Kedei Naspo, that's brought down, it's unnecessary, true, we could learn from somebody else, it was just dragged along. And another place it says, no, he holds like Rabbi Shimon, who requires not only Kohen, but also Etzba, and therefore we need this additional limud here, because we wouldn't have it without the Hekesh between the Chatat Ov and the Chatat Beima. So that's to explain the position of the Chachamim. V'tana kama, v'rabalazza Rabbi Shimon, mimula orif minoluhu. We know that Rabbi Shmuel learned the Hekesh over here, that mimishpat, teaches that Chatat Ov teaches us to Olata Ov. It teaches us there that it requires Mul Orif, the location in which Malika is done. By Chatat Ov, we have it specifically says Mul Arpo. By Olata Ov, we don't have anything written. So Mimishpat teaches me from whatever was true by the Chatat Ov, that's the location for Olata Ov. So Gemara wants to know now, wait, what about the Tana Kama and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon? Where do they know that up from? So Gemara answers, that's not a problem. Gemara Malika, Mimilika. We have the word Malak that's found both by Chatat Ov and it's found by Olata Ov. Just like by Chatat Ov, we already have a Gilui Milta. What is Malika by Chatat Ov? That's Mul Orif, Mul Arpo. That's behind the neck, on the nape of the neck. So too, over here by Olat Ov, it mentions the word Malika. It doesn't tell where it is, but we're going to learn that out from the Malika that is mentioned by Chatat Ov. That gives us all the Limudim. In summary, what we were looking for here was the focus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. The Chachamim believe that you have to sever the head entirely by the Olat Ov, meaning that to cut through both Simanim, as opposed to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, believes you only need Rov Simanim by the Olata Ov, and you don't need to cut him across. You're right. The goof and the head have to be together because of the Hekesh between Olata Ov and Chatat Ov. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon requires you to keep it together. It's not enough that you just do Rov Simanim. It's that must be Rov Simanim and not the whole way through. Correct. Next Mishnah. Kasher B'Torim Pasul B'Mnei Yonah. Whatever is good by Torim is problematic by Bnei Yonah. Kasher b'Bnei Yonah, whatever is good by the Bnei Yonah, is pasul b'Torim, is no good by the Torim. Tichilat ha-tzihuv b'zeh u'b'zeh pasul. When it comes to the beginning of the yellow stage, meaning when the feathers begin to turn yellow, in that instance, the Bnei Yonah are problematic and the Torim are problematic. So now over here, when we're discussing the difference between Bnei Yonah and Torim, Gemara is going to go through this, but Torim are only brought when they're Gedolim, only when they're brought as large, fully grown animals. Bnei Yonah, on the other hand, because of the word Bnei, are brought only when they are young. So the Mishnah is stating over here that Bnei Yonah, when they're young, they are kosher to be brought as Karbanot. At that same time, Torim would be Pasulim. The Torim, which are young, would not be qualified to be brought as Karbanot or the Karbanot of birds. On the other hand, the other way around, Torim, which are fully grown birds and kosher to be brought as fully grown birds, then Bnei Yonah would not be allowed to be brought then, because then there would be a Bnei Yonah, not a Bnei Yonah. And because of that, they would be disqualified. So the Mishnah makes the first statement that whenever a Yonah, Bnei Yonah is kosher, then a Tor is not kosher. And in age-wise, wherever a Tor is kosher, then a Bnei Yonah or Ben Yonah is not kosher. The additional thing the Mishnah adds for us is there is a point in time or a threshold where neither of them are qualified. And that's Tchilat Zihuv, when the feathers begin to thicken out and turn yellow. At that time, they are no longer Bnei Yonah. They're no longer young enough to be qualified as Bnei Yonah. On the other hand, they are also not big enough and reached the maturity to be considered Gedolim by Torim. What the definition of these words are, so generally, I would just say Torim are translated as turtle doves, and Bnei Yonah are either translated as young doves or as pigeons. So one of those two. Okay, now Tanu Rabanan. Torim, Gedolim, Kshirim. So this is what we just summarized in the Mishnah, that Torim, when they are fully mature, are Kshirim. Ktanim, when they are young, Psulim. Bnei Yonah is just the opposite. Ktanim, Kshirim, when they're young, then they're fine, they're good. Gedolim, once they reach maturity, Psulim, they're no good. Nimtza, and this is there what our Mishnah said, kasher b'torim, whatever is good for torim, pasul b'nei yonah, no good by b'nei yonah, kasher b'nei yonah, pasul b'torim. Tanu Rabbanan, torim gidolim velo k'tanim. Then when it comes to torim, they have to be brought when they're fully mature and not when they're k'tanim. Shiachol v'alo dinhu. Tosos makes one comment over here. He says, we never have this in Shah, because the words shiachol and alo dinhu function differently. You look in the Tosfot, shiachol v'alo dinhu, he says, b'shum duchta lo garsin antarvayu. There is nowhere in Shas that we have both of these words in proximity or juxtaposed. Doesn't make sense, because shi'achol, the word shi'achol is a code word by the Gemara, mashma di la haikra. Had I not had this pasuk, lo hava mino hachi, I would never have thought to say this. So without the pasuk, I would never have thought to say this. The other, aval, halo dinu, is the other way around, mashma di la haikra, hayolo lamarkein. Without pasuk, I would have said this. I mean, halo dinu means that it would have been a kavachomer, but the pasuk comes to tell me, don't make that kavachomer. Yachol is the other way around. Yachol is that I would have never thought to say this, but the pasuk comes and tells me, do this. So over here, it sounds like it's halo dinu, that we should have been able to include young torim, but the pasuk somehow tells me not. But in one sense, without the pasuk, I wouldn't have known what to say over here, and the pasuk comes and teaches me through a hekesh what to do. So the Gemara probably used both Lashonot because it's a mix of both. It's not literally a Kavachomer because it's not really a Kavachomer. It would have just been that the word Torim would have meant everything. On the other hand, it's also Shiachol because without the Pasuk, I wouldn't have known exactly how to read Torim. So they mixed them together, although Tosu seems to indicate that it should have been one or the other and not both of them together. Shiachol v'lo dinu. Uma b'nei yonah shlo hukshiru b'gdolim hukshiru b'ktanim. When it comes to b'nei yonah, that they're only good when they are not mature, when they're young, but when they come full maturity, they're no good. Torim, shukshu b'gdolim. Torim, they're already at full maturity, are good. And din shukshu b'gdolim, certainly they should be fine when they're young ones. Talmud lomar, torim, gedolim, velo k'tanim. We learn from the word torim, only at full maturity, and not k'tanim. So you see, that's the equivalent of what halo dinhu. It's not exactly a Kal v'Chomer, but I would have suggested that by Torim, I should have everything be included. But then the Gemara comes on and says, no, Tamalomar Torim. Now, how that works, we don't know yet. The Gemara will explain to us why that's the case. Now, Bnei Yonah, Tanim, V'lo Gdolim. By Bnei Yonah, I said only young ones and not fully mature ones. Shiachol, V'alo Dinu. Again, the mixture of these two, the Lishonot over here. Ma Torim, Shalo Ukshru B'Ktanim, Ukshru B'Gdolim. By Torim, which only at full maturity are allowed to be used, by Ktanim they're not, by young ones are not allowed to be used. Bnei Yonah, shukshu b'ktanim. Bnei Yonah, that already, when they're young, allowed to be used. Enu din shukshu b'gdolim. Certainly they should be used when they reach full maturity. Tamalomar, Bnei Yonah, Ketanim velo gdolim. B'nei Yonah means only young ones and not the older ones. So I ask, my Talmuda, why does the word Torim mean fully mature, and B'nei Yonah means young ones? So Amar Rava, lo dishtameit kra v'lichtov, right? The pasuk shouldn't have written and said, min b'nei Torim, o min hayona. So the way Rashi reads it, that you have many times throughout the Torah where we have a requirement of using birds. And every time it says the birds, it says Torim uvnei Yona. The same Lashon exactly. Rashi says, well, listen, in one of those places, the Torah should have just made it different and written like this. V'lichto min b'nei Torim, o min b'nei Yona. In one of those locations, it just should have read b'nei Torim and Yona. If I did that, then I would also have b'nei Torim and Yona. The fact that the Torah consistently always says Torim and b'nei Yona means that it's coming to indicate is that b'nei Yona means the young ones and Torim means the mature ones. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand this. Ema b'nei Yona dichtibu rachmana b'nei ketanim in gdolim lo. The only one where I really have a definition is by b'nei Yona. By Yona, it says b'nei Yona. So there we know for sure it's young ones. So over there we'll say young ones, yes. Older ones, mature ones, no. But by Torim, ibay gdolim laiti, ibay ketanim laiti. I can bring whatever I want. I can bring big ones or small ones. Torim is a generic term. It can mean young ones or mature ones. Where it says, no, there's a hekesh between them. Dumya b'nei Yona. There's a hekesh between b'nei Yona and Torim. Ma b'nei Yona ketanim in gdolim lo. Av Torim gdolim in ketanim lo. The hekesh is that since b'nei Yona only allow you to have one of the two options, the young ones, not the mature ones, so too, by Torim, you only have one of those two options. And the one that makes more sense is Torim is a gedolim, because it's missing the word b'nei. And therefore, only you can bring mature ones, and you cannot bring the young ones. Now, in terms of what the Gemara's question is over here, Rashi suggests that the question over here is the Gemara wants to know, how do you know it's me'akev? Okay, I understand l'chatchila, you should bring Torim, gedolim, and b'nei Yonah as gedolim. So based on that, the Gemara says, lo lishtame kra. If you wanted to say that it's not me'akev, then at least one of those psukim should have changed the lashon. Since we have no pasuk that changes the lashon, and consistently the Torah says the same thing over and over again, that teaches me it's le'akev. That's the way Rashi learns it. Right, the principle that we have by kodshim in general, when the Torah repeats something, that is le'akev. That's right, exactly. Somewhat along those lines, something akin to that. That's what Rashi is suggesting over here. Tosfot, on the other hand, says, Tema, kevin dekati lo kaimelan d'bnei yonah v'ktanim davka, kevin alei detorim lo hukshu v'ktanim. How do you know that Torim means only mature ones? Because the only way we know that Torim means only mature ones, it's because of B'nai Yonah. Go for Yadena, let me do me the B'nai Yonah. The only reason we know that's true is because of the Hekesh to B'nai Yonah. V'yesh lamar d'ochi kamar di, matzit l'melef mi dukta achrina de Torim mashma gdolim, havi minimi kavachomer nebi Yonah afilu gdolim. He says this, maybe from somewhere else I could have figured out that the word Torim only means mature ones. So I would add a havamina that from B'nai Yonah I could learn a kavachomer that even gdolim. Question of the Gemara over here, it's not whether it's the Akev or not the Akev, but rather, question of the Gemara over here is, listen, if I was able to figure out somewhere else that Torim are considered to be big ones, then I should still be able to make B'nai Yonah into big ones as well. So then along comes the Torah and says, no, because Lo Dishtame Kra.
The fact that the Torah uses the word B'nai, particularly by one of them and not by the other, is an indication that the word B'nai is Davka. B'nai means young ones and not older ones. Otherwise, the Torah should have used the word B'nai in the other category. Or it shouldn't have used the word B'nai at all. The fact that the Torah goes out its way to use the word B'nai must mean something over here. And that means that B'nai Yonah are young ones and not mature ones.
And he says, the Kodesh Perish Shalom Bayel Al-Ikov. And he says, Shela Pri Risho, Rashi's explanation is difficult. Di Mashma Gedolim Echi by the Midrash by Kavachomer. Because if it really means Gedolim, then how could you ever suggest by Kavachomer Lafuke Kroami Mashmute? Take the Pasuk out of its meaning. Lameimer Delo Ma'akev. And to say that it's not Ma'akev. I mean, that what's the Havamina? According to Rashi, what do you mean it's not Ma'akev? What was the Havamina of the Gemara to say it's not Ma'akev over here? What? You have a Kavachomer? So a Kavachomer is going to take you out of the Poshup Shat of the Pasuk. The Poshup Shat of the Pasuk. So that's what Tosfot suggests is the alternative explanation. But not that here we're dealing with Ikuv or not Ikuv. Tarabanan. Yochol Yoei Kol Torim V'chol B'nei Yonah K'sherim. I would think all Torim and all B'nei Yonah would be fine. Tamalomer Mina Torim V'lo Kol Torim. Some. Min. Min means some of them are okay. But not all Torim, min b'nei Yonah, some of the b'nei Yonah, okay, but local b'nei Yonah, prat. So what does that come to exclude? The tchilat tziyuv shebezeh b'zeh, the beginning of the thickening of the feathers, the yellowishness of the feathers that begins in each one of them, that's pasul. So me'ema taya Torim kerim, when do Torim become big enough, mature enough that they're kasher? Mishiyazhivu, once they turn golden. So when they're yellow, or the beginning of the yellowing process, the thickening of the feathers, they are psulim, they're still considered too young to be good as korbanot. Mishiyazhivu, Once they reach the point where they are golden, that dark yellow is coming in, and they're much thicker, the feathers. At that point in time, they're already considered mature enough that they are considered Torim. When do Bnei Yonah become problematic? Now, Bnei Yonah means from young ones. So that when they're young, they're good. When do they grow out of that? When do they mature out of that, that they're no longer good? Mishiyat Zivu. Again, once they reach the point where they begin to turn yellow, they are problematic. Tani Rav Yaakov Karcha Meimatai Bnei Yonah Kshirim. What's the minimum standard by Bnei Yonah? A newly born Bnei Yonah doesn't seem right to put on the Mizbeach. That seems like a maos. Something that wouldn't be appropriate to put on the Mizbeach. We know that by Behemoth. You have to wait at least 8 days. And preferably 30 days before you put it on the Mizbeach. So over here, by the birds, by the Torim, you don't have this issue. Because Torim only start once they're mature. So that there's no question about. But Bnei Yonah, which have an upper limit, what's the minimum or the lower limit by them? When's the first time you can bring a Bnei Yonah? So it says, Mishia al-U. Hu tani lo v'hu amarla. He learned this. That's what he had the Masor from his Rebbe about. V'hu amarla now explained it. Because the Pasuk in Iob says, Efrochav ya'al-U dam. That the young ones suck up the blood. Emat, when is that? When you pull a feather out of it, and it bleeds. Meaning that the ya'alu, as you see in Tosfos, the word ya'alu, tsela mitargaminan il'a. That's the times that it fills in. The shamit gadfo, when you pull out the feather, blood comes out of the ribs. Meaning that the placement where the feathers are attached to the body, once the blood fills into the animal, when you pluck a feather, it'll bleed over there. When it's too young, when you pluck the feather, there's no blood over there, it won't bleed. That it gets absorbed. And that's what we saw here from the puzzle, like sucked up. Meaning that once the blood is absorbed into the bones, into the frame of the bird, then that's considered to be mature enough to be brought on the Mizbeach or the Bnei Yonah. If you pluck a feather at that point, it will bleed. So that's the minimum standard by the Bnei Yonah. And then once it starts to turn yellow, then it's graduated out. It's too mature to be brought on the Mizbeach. So those are the time frame in which a Ben Yonah can be brought. By Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira has a very simple question. Homer hare alai ola min atorim umin Bnei Yonah. So I'm going to bring an ola, and I can bring it from Torim or Bnei Yonah. I can bring it from one or the other. Vevi tchilat siyuv shebezeh bezeh. And then he goes ahead and brings tchilat siyuv by both of them. Mahu, what's the din over here? Sveika havi v'nofik. It's a suffik, and he's yotze. Odilma birya havi v'lo nofik. Or maybe it's a separate entity, and he's not nofik. What Rabbi Zeira's question is, when I reach tchilat siyuv, what's the din of the animal? We said now that tchilat siyuv is already problematic for Ben Yonah. It's already too mature to be brought on the Mizbeach. On the other hand, it said tchilat siyuv is too early to bring a Torim on the Mizbeach. They're not mature enough to be put on the Mizbeach. Why is that? Is that because I don't know when the beginning process of maturity is and the end of being young is? So I know that tchilat siyuv is definitely below that point, is young. Above that, I'm not sure. Mishi Yazhivu, when they read the golden point, I know already those are mature. But between tchilat siyuv and Yazhivu, that period in between, I'm just not sure what it is. So what do I say to you? I say, listen, it's a safek. So if you don't know what to do, Bnei Yonah, don't bring them in that period because they might be too mature. By Torim, which have to be mature, maybe they're not mature enough. So don't bring any of the birds in that period of time. Not because it's too old or too young. It's just because I just don't know which one of them it is. Is it too mature or is it still young? So that safek I can eliminate. How do I eliminate that safek? Because I now made a neder. Then I'm going to bring my ola either from Torim or Bnei Yonah. One of the two. And then I go ahead and bring both of them to the Mizbeach, and I put them both on the Mizbeach, both of them at the same time period, between Tchilat Zihuv to the Yazhivu. So now, if it's really a Safek, whether it's still in its young state, or it's mature enough, then one of the two is okay. Either the Ben Yonah, it's still young enough, and it's fine, or it's already mature enough for the Torim. One of those two will be fine, and I'll be discharged my obligation. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is, similar to what we have by a Keves, something called a Palges. That a keves is something within its first year. It's a sheep within its first year. That's a ben shana, keves ben shana. On the other hand, an ayo is shtei shanim, is 2 years old, and that's going to be brought on the Mizbeach. There's something called a palges. That's the 13th month. Between the 12th, end of the 12th month and the end of the 13th month, that 1 month period, there's an in-between stage between a keves ben shana and an ayo, which is shtei shanim. It's called a palges. A palges does not qualify as a keves, nor as an ayo. It's neither. It's not a keves, it's not an ayo. So you have something over here. Maybe the same thing here by the birds. That these birds, in that period between tchilat siyuv, the beginning of the yellowing, and before the time it turns golden, they're in an interim stage where they're no longer called young, but they're also not called mature. There's that interim stage of birya bifnei atzma, their own species, their own entity, during that period of time. If that's the case, then you're not yotze, you're nether. Because neither of them are ksheirim. Neither the ben yonah, nor the Torah will be kasher here, because it's not a safek. Neither of them are kasher during that period of time. So Amar Rav Tashma, I'll tell you the answer to this. Prat etchilat ziyuv shebezeh bezeh. That's our Mishnah shepasul. Our Mishnah says explicitly that they're excluded because of pasul. Iamart bishlama birya havi shapir. If you say that it's own entity, that makes a lot of sense. Because then the Torah comes to posel something that's own birya. Something that's in between that state of beginning to yellow and the golden state, that's an birya that's not qualified, and the Torah says out, you can't use them. Eliyamar tzveika, if you say it's a safek, avi, it's trichkrali mute tzveika. Since when do we need a posuk to eliminate the safek? Safek is something that exists for us as humans, but for the Torah knows exactly what it wants. The Torah will never exclude a safek. The Torah excludes something that's too old and something that's too young. But we have a safek of when it's too old and when it's too young, the Torah's not going to come and say to us, okay, leave those out. So the fact that we have a posuk, we learn how the posuk of tchilat tziyuv, then that already shows us that the Torah is telling us that that's pasul because it's a birya finance, might can't be an issue of safek.